Welcome to the Hyperion Hub, your meeting place for all things Disney. Now your hosts.
Hello and welcome to the Hyperion Hub, your meeting place for all things Disney. I'm John Alois and I'm joined by Sean Degenhart.
Bazinga.
And John Redlingschaefer.
Can you say that on the podcast?
I think so. I think it.
You just did.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
All right.
It's a Warner Brothers property.
We are glad you're joining us for this Disney podcast. You can join us on social media.
Knocked him off there.
Well, we're not Disney property. We say that.
John thinks he is. Yeah.
You can join us on social media. Follow us there. Contact us at podcast@thehyperionhub.com. If you have a Disney review, send us a voice recorded message at our email address. Once again, podcast@thehyperionhub.com. Wherever you're listening to us, please subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review. It helps more people find the show.
It's time for our Disney views.
Some podcasts like to have Disney news. We share our Disney views. And this week I want to play a little game. We're going to call it Leave It or Change It.
No. This is not in the script.
No, it's not. And we're going to talk about Disney park attractions. I'll say the name of an attraction, and maybe both of you can answer at the same time even. Some, I think, will be slam dunks.
He just gave us a stern look that we better do it that way or we're off the show.
Did you catch that?
My smile hasn't left my face.
Where was the script? I'm always joyous
when I'm with you two. All right. And you can answer at the same time. Might get heated. Might be fun.
Is there a buzzer?
No buzzers on this one.
So just slap the table.
Yeah. All right, got it.
There's no right or wrong answer.
Well, we know that's a lie, especially if we disagree with that guy.
And this is just for an example. This is an easy one. I'm going to say it's a small world.
Change it. No.
Leave it and change it.
That was just to antagonize. Of course, it's a leave it.
Okay. So I only have two answers. Leave it or change it, or can we?
No, because sure, you're playing with Alois. He's going to come up with three or four different options for him.
Slight modification.
That's a change it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Destroy it, also in there?
Leave it exactly
Burn
the
it?
Way it is,
okay.
Or change it.
Okay.
All right.
I mean, how drastic can we get?
So you never gave us an answer.
On what?
It's a small one.
Leave it.
Okay. All right, here we go.
I thought that was just practice.
Tougher now. You haven't ridden this, but it's a classic. The Matterhorn.
Leave it. Weren't we supposed to do it at the same time? I tried.
No, that's fine. I'm gonna say.
I was thinking.
Oh well, then tell me when you're ready.
I'll leave it. We'll leave it.
Well,
right.
I say that because I've never ridden it and I want to ride it.
Yeah, and it's been upgraded. It's still pretty bumpy. I know.
But if I'm gonna throw out my back, I might as well do it on the Matterhorn.
There you go. That's a T-shirt. Tomorrowland Speedway.
Change it.
Haven't done it.
What? Yeah. What?
Sorry.
Country Bears, Presidents.
Oh, here comes the list. See, there's a list. You knew it.
Put it on your list.
All right.
Speaking of T-shirts, we got to have a list of when he finally does those rides and we cross them off.
What did you say? Change it?
Change it.
Why?
I can't inhale any more fumes.
Okay. I get that. I would change it and I would upgrade the vehicles.
I think that's a fair assessment. I also think there are better self-propelled controls that can be put in place. I've suffering whiplash with my teenage drivers as it is, but when they were toddlers, it was 10 times worse.
Yeah, I don't want to get rid of it because I think it's a great opportunity for young kids to get, you know, that's the first time they drive a vehicle, a lot of kids.
That's using the word loosely. but I also like the fact that you can enjoy that. You ride with your younger children and what you're riding around and looking at. Space Mountain, the People Mover. Yeah. You can't change the scenery.
You haven't ridden it, but would you change it?
Probably.
To what?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Flying saucer.
Would you just get
rid of it? Maybe some upgrades.
Yeah.
I from a environmental standpoint, I mean, I feel for those cast members. By the end of the day, they look like they were working the pits in the 1940s Indianapolis 500 when they move their goggles up and there's just a huge mark of grease everywhere.
The Carousel of Progress.
Leave it.
Leave it.
Change it. Got to change that final scene. We need an upgrade.
We don't got to do anything.
Got to change that final scene.
We're wrong.
That scene you're not wrong. It's your opinion.
But
that scene.
What would you change about it?
I would make it. I don't know if I would make it futuristic or if I would.
Define futuristic with that.
Yeah, exactly. Or would I bring it into this century? I mean, it's supposed to be.
But that's almost the fun part of it.
Right.
It's so out of date. Mm-hmm.
No.
I mean, half of Tomorrowland is nostalgia anyway.
Sure, of course.
I mean, your Astro Orbiter is hardly the breaking things from NASA.
Sure, sure, sure.
So if you want it to fulfill its initial mission, then it, like the parks, wouldn't always be changing.
However, this Tomorrowland that we're currently in isn't really supposed to be the Tomorrowland that Walt thought of. It's supposed to be more of a comic book-y, you know, look back at mid-century future. But the Carousel of Progress should, in my opinion, live up to its show.
You get so few of original Walt stuff. I don't know.
It has been changed. The Shermans wrote a second song that was in there at one point, and it was to promote Now is the Time. GE didn't want you thinking about tomorrow. They want you purchasing now.
Well, as a GE shock, as a GE stockholder, I appreciate that. Yes.
All right. Last
I wouldn't
one.
Mind an additional. They could add a scene.
Add
can
a they?
Not replace.
Can they, though? I don't know if they can.
They can do anything
that's,
they want.
That stage is built within that building. Yeah.
I think you're saying that.
There's only so many pieces of the pie.
Yeah.
Well, and the real estate may be the problem if you try to expand there.
Yeah. The rumor a couple of years ago was Tom Hanks was going to revoice.
That's still going around.
Is it? Room.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know. I wouldn't mind an upgrade there. Because that is not the show that Walt had.
Fair enough. But, I mean, the fact that you have him and the Sherman Brothers in the video out front, the fact that it's still that, you know, hokey modern and the stove talking and smoking and all. I mean, come on. You the last few times we've been down there, the audience is clapping along with it. I mean, sure. Everybody knows you're not looking for the best and the greatest new innovations. It's fun.
All right, last one. Expedition Everest.
Leave it.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Assuming the Yeti could work once in a while, it'd be nice. Yeah,
no, it still works.
Yeah, does it?
Put a little light on it.
It boogies. Disco Yeti.
It boogies.
And 4,000 hair ties and 2,000 pairs of sunglasses.
Right. Time for the second half of our conversation with Dan Abraham, Trent Corey, and Brad Simonson, the directors and producer of Once Upon a Studio. And just to refresh your memory from last week, you will hear them in this order. First Trent, then Dan, then Brad.
Are there any Easter eggs that have yet to be discovered?
That's a good question. I feel like a lot of them have been.
We talked about the snow globe from Mary Poppins is on the shelf there by the puppies, the Dalmatian puppies. Mm-hmm. We talked about Lucille Crunklehorn being there in the caffeine patch with Merlin and that. That's our coffee bar.
She's behind the counter on the other side, right? Yeah.
Yes, she in Meet the Robinsons, she has a caffeine patch on her arm. And that's how that area of the studio got its name. We call it the caffeine patch based on Lucille Crunklehorn's caffeine patch. So when we knew we were going to have a shot there, I'm like, we gotta rebuild Lucille from scratch because she needs to be there for just for a little nod to Meet the Robinsons from when that, you know. That's whenever, you know, you get together with a friend here at the studio, you'll say, oh, meet me down in the patch in 5 minutes, you know. It's for Lucille.
I think so many people are focused on the characters that they might miss the things on the wall, especially in that initial shot where Mickey and Minnie are in the center. You've got all those animators. I think Tyrus Wong's there, you know, those pictures of people. How much manipulation of the set did you have to do for those things? I mean, were they a lot of them already there, or did you set those up?
Yeah, so early on, we knew that we were trying to represent the films, but not only that, the artists and the people that have worked at Disney over the last 100 years that we're all standing on the shoulders of. So the idea to include some portraits in the studio was really important to us. And how do you pick? You know, we only have so many walls and so many portraits. How do you pick what we can actually get in the film? So we did our best to work. We worked with the archives, Disney archives, and found some photos of some people that have inspired us out of the hundreds or thousands. And in terms of the manipulation in the set and the studio, really the biggest thing was we had to work with the archives team and the environments team at Disney to swap out any paintings or drawings on the wall that weren't going to have a character jump out of them that had a character. So we had a lot of background paintings so that if you're going down the hall and you see Moana, you don't expect Dumbo to jump out of the drawing. Because if you were to see a still drawing there, you'd say, how come you're not joining the party? So a lot of them was just swapping artwork. But in general, our studio is filled with art, like you see in the short.
We basically set dressed. So when Dan and Trent did the boards, right, we knew then those locations. And then as Trent was saying, the guys worked with the archives. We gave a list. They brought forward, you know, images that they would like. And then we had to clear everything through legal. Legal, you know, everything gets cleared and make sure that we have the rights to use all those things. And then we took a pass with the guys, walked through, and then set dressed every single location just like it was a live action shoot. And that front facade that we push into, we actually had to build out a facade, because if you go into our studio, that's actually a sunken wall with Walt Disney Animation on it. So we actually built that out and set dressed it. So yeah, there's a few times like that.
And it was difficult as well, because just like how hundreds and hundreds of characters aren't in our short, it's like, how do you pick the people that you put on the walls? Because again, there's hundreds and thousands of people that, you know, should be on the walls in this thing, because Trent and I have been saying forever that every person that's ever worked at the studio should be in the credits, because that's how we got to make this short, because of the work that they did, the characters they created, the, you know, the things they had to persevere and work through, and all of those things. Like, we owe it to everyone that's ever worked here before us. And I just wish, again, that they could all have their portrait on the wall for sure.
Another thing I'm curious about, you mentioned... Ralph walks into the door and he says the name of a character that was not created by Disney, Garfield. So how did that come about?
Who's Garfield? Exactly. Well, it's true. Like, God only knows who Ralph is talking about. There could be President Garfield. We don't know. We have no idea.
Very nice.
Back when Trent and I were thinking about that joke, at first we had him run into the door, and then Mickey says, Ralph, are you okay? And we're like, oh, never better, Minnie. Mm-hmm. And we thought, oh, that's funny. And then, oh, never better, Pluto. And, oh, that's funny. Pluto doesn't even talk. And then Trent just says, never better, Garfield. And I was crying. I was laughing so hard. It was so random. And it just felt so Ralph. It just felt like he clocked himself a good one. If he thinks that's President Garfield, then I don't know.
That was kind of the mood of our story room the whole time. This project was so interesting because when Dan and I pitched it and it got greenlit, we kind of thought that maybe everybody in the studio from the top down is going to want to have a say on what characters are in it and how they're represented and what they're wearing and all that sort of thing. You know, what era Mickey, everything. And we found as we made this thing that 99.9% of those choices were ours. We were just in the story room trying to make each other laugh, saying, oh, Belle should be in the blue and white outfit, and oh, and Beast will be this, and what if Cusco's the llama? So all those little choices and jokes, that was just us making the short we wanted to make, and I was waiting the whole time for someone to say, you can't do that, and yeah, it never happened, not once.
I thought that they'd be a stickler for make sure Cinderella is wearing her big, you know, ball gown, and make sure Mickey's in his red shorts. And we never got one of those notes about what the character should be wearing or anything like that. It was.
I think that speaks to Dan's encyclopedia knowledge and Trent's love for Disney. I think that because the choices they made are spot on and wonderful, because we did share this with our partners through the company as we were doing it. We shared it with all those folks that would actually say those things like change this to that and this to that. But I have to say, every time we showed it, they would say, oh my God, you made the perfect choices. And even the Mickey in the hat, I remember one of the group saying, oh my God, Mickey's Christmas, that's the perfect choice. So kudos to the guys there.
Tell us about the time with Bernie.
Trent and I started storyboarding 8 months prior to anyone knowing. And the very first panel I drew was Bernie Mattinson and a young intern are walking out of the studio at the end of the day. This was obviously, this was months and months and months before Bernie knew he was going to be in it or even be asked to be in it. But there's just no better person to represent sort of the history and legacy. Bernie Mattinson worked at Walt Disney Animation Studios for just shy of 70 years. He started in the early 50s. His first movie was Lady and the Tramp, and his last movie was Strange World. And he was he did everything. He was a director, a producer, a storyboard artist, an animator, a cleanup artist. He did like everything. He was Sleeping Beauty and The Lion King. And I mean, when you think about every movie that he touched and worked on and just was such a gentleman and all that, I was like, that's who we need to sort of show at the very beginning. When he says, if these walls could talk, like he knows better than anyone, just the history and the legacy and the love of the studio. And we were so happy when he said, yeah, sure, I'll do it, you know. And we had a great day filming with him and Renika, and then we got to show him a few months later his footage. We were in editorial, I remember one day on the big screen there in editorial, we had him come in to see, you know, which shot that we chose and everything. And boy, he was so into it. He got such a kick out of seeing himself on the big screen. And sadly, we lost him this past February. It's been almost a year now, but he was just so, so happy to be part of this. And it's so cool how so many people know who he is now, even though like he's touched almost 70 years of films at Disney. So it's very, very cool for him to sort of get his spotlight now. So I think he'd be very happy.
Every time I watch that shot, still, I think like Disney has such a rich history of passing the torch and mentorship and innovating the medium. And Bernie kind of embodies that. I mean, he was the only one still working there that had worked with Walt and learned from the Nine Old Men and all those movies that Dan mentioned. So that idea of him walking out with this new intern and passing that legacy along to the next generation was really important to us.
And I gotta say too, I read into it a little bit, but Bernie, to think of everything that he went through in his career, hand-drawn animation sort of going away and CG animation coming in and that being the new medium, a whole new take on, you know, what he'd been doing for decades, all the regime changes, you know, Walt's death, the new guy coming in, the next new guy coming in, and Jen Lee. I mean, so, and everything changes. Everything's constantly changing at the studio. And there's a lot of days that aren't a lot of fun. But it's when he turns it around and he says, if these walls could talk, and there is that sincere smile on his face and that twinkle in his eye, I read that as it's all so worth it. It's all so worth it, and I'm sure he would have worked here for decades more if he could have, because it's so rewarding working with the people that we get to work with and all the talented artists and these just creative powerhouses that all are on the same page, just wanting to create something memorable and relatable for people. And it's such a kick to be a part of all of that. And I see all of that on Bernie's face when he delivers that line. I find it very touching.
So many different levels of tribute within this whole special. And I just love kind of peeling back those layers and, you know, finding all of them.
My favorite cameo is when Mickey literally says to Oswald, after you. And, you know, I think that most Disney fans are going to understand that line, but maybe not everyone who watches the short is going to get it. That line also gives me goosebumps, and it's so sincere. Mickey is very sincere when he sees Walt, and equally as sincere when he welcomes Oswald. And it's just such a great moment. I love all the gags, but that moment in particular stands out.
You know, that moment has a really cool history, because when I mentioned earlier about us putting a call out to the studio and saying, please send us, you know, we'd pitched The Short and we'd seen the enthusiasm, and we said, let us know your favorite movies, your favorite characters, if you have any interactions that you think would be fun. And I think an eye-opening thing about that process was everybody, all the generations at our studio have a favorite movie for a different reason. There's nostalgia behind Treasure Planet or Beauty and the Beast or whatever you grew up with, and people hold these movies so close to their heart. But in the training department, Nancy Evans submitted that exact, we didn't change it, she submitted that line of Oswald saying or Mickey saying after you and Oswald walking by, and Dan, we tried it in a few spots, right, and kept having to move it around.
Yeah, it did. When she said that, we knew that was gold. Thank you, Nancy Evans. And that was in there then. She submitted that shortly after that pitch in that December, and it's been in there ever since. Yeah, we did move it around a few different places. He did say it inside at one point and stuff. But yeah, I love hearing that resonated with you, because I praise Nancy's name every time somebody does that, because it's she just, that's her, that was her one note. It's like she gave us that one idea, she dropped the mic and she walked out of the room. And it means the world to so many people. Like, all the Oswald fans just cheer for that.
And that, you know, Mickey is animated beautifully in that shot by one of our interns, Austin, a trailer, who animated Mickey beautifully a few times in The Short. And Oswald was animated by Nick Ranieri, who had come back to animate Cusco's Llama and a few other characters too.
The Donald bit was just priceless.
The elevator?
Yeah, the elevator, letting him be Donald in every meaning of the word.
Well, that was, Dan had boarded that and pitched that idea early on. And I feel like That was there pretty early, and it kind of set a bar of character interactions. Of, you know, I remember Dan pitching it, saying like, who would piss off Donald the most? Well, Flash the Swan one. And I feel like that set the bar throughout The Short afterwards, of finding those pairings that work really well together.
Another favorite part of mine is Eric, get your dog. That was just a great, almost like a throwaway line, like, you know, we've been living here with this and his dog's always getting in trouble and stealing stuff. And that was hilarious. When Alan Adale starts playing When You Wish Upon a Star at the end, you know, we're kind of coming down emotionally, and then you hear that. I mean, and the whole thing just lifts when you hear the original choir recording of it come in. And
Hades still... you know, throws a little splash of sarcasm in there too. So,
and then Cliff Edwards' voice coming in with that, and just opens up to that beautiful scene with the full chorus, a perfect, perfect ending. And I don't know if this was intentional or not, but the last few chords of that kind of almost echo the final chords of Feed the Birds. There's some, it's like goes to like from a one to a, like a flat six to a flat two before going back to the one. And I don't know if that was intentional or not, but it had that feel of the ending of Feed the Birds.
You know, I don't know if that's intentional either, but we had Dave Metzger was our composer and worked with our music team. And he, I mean, he's such a lovely guy. And Dave Metzger kind of, Dan and I always joked, because he like embodied this short as a human being. I mean, he is just the warmest guy. And he did a great job of weaving those themes into the short and doing little callbacks, even very subtle, just a couple chords from a song you recognize, or weaving in things like the Peter Pan music and seamlessly putting it into the score. So I wouldn't be surprised if he did it on purpose.
We're working on getting him to talk to him, so I'll ask him about that.
Oh, yeah. I want to know. Yeah. One of the Easter eggs, when Alan Adale is sitting up there in the O in animation, that's taken from obviously the beginning of Robin Hood when he is the narrator and he sits in the O of Once Upon a Time. Thought that would be kind of a fun little callback.
Excellent.
But yeah, we really, really wanted to get Cliff Edwards as the voice, the original voice of Jiminy Cricket to you know, end. He's the ace, right? He throwing the ace. It's Jiminy Cricket singing "When You Wish Upon a Star," and the technical folks really had to work, because I wonder how many times Cliff Edwards sang "When You Wish Upon a Star." Probably a million, right, in his career or whatever. But we did not have one recording where the music and the vocal were separate, and so they had to go in. And at first, they were like, "I don't know if we're going to be able to do this," but they were able to strip out the original score and just get his voice for us. And I just kept begging them. I'm like, please, please, please. I don't want a Jiminy Cricket sound alike. I'd much rather, you know, it just be Jiminy Cricket. Yeah. And they, again, like Brad always says, like, let's think about it.
Well, probably utilizing the software that the Beatles used, where they pulled, you know, their vocals from the actual, music from the background. So I'm sure there was some sort of tool like that used.
Wizardry.
Can I just ask one more quick question? As far as producing in general, how difficult is it to take on a project like this and not try to implement some of your own thoughts and ideas and let the directors direct, and you've got all these ideas coming from all over the studio? Is that something for a special project like this that can be difficult?
Well, I think that for any of our projects at the studio, we value input, right, from everyone. We screen our projects many, many times, and with this one, Dan and Trent, to their credit, they did exactly what they said, which is, after they pitched it to the studio, we were all excited. They then said, hey, if you have ideas, please share them, because that's the collective power of having a studio of 1,000 people, is, and especially like Dan was saying, that all love Disney and care deeply. And in regards to, like, you know, the director's vision from a producerial perspective, you want the directors to have everything they want. That's the goal, to never say no and to try to accomplish it. And great directors allow that input from other, just like the Nancy story. Like, you know, everybody contributes in their own way, and then the directors are that you know, alchemy that puts it together and then brings it to life. And as a producer, you're supporting them and trying to set schedules and timing and delivery of things in a way that it complements their creative needs and goals, so that they can be plussing things all along the way. You know, because you see one thing or hear one thing and you go, oh, well, what about that? And so you always want to make room to add that one more character and to make that one more tweak or to add that little effect, because that's what makes the magic happen.
They made us feel, and the whole team too involved, made us feel like, we never had to, I mean, Dan and I were aware of the complexities, but we could focus 100% of our energy on the creative and not have too much noise of how difficult things were. The team was hard at work figuring that out while we were figuring out the story, which as a director is a great thing to just focus on the project and trusting that the team will take it home.
So what is next for all of you?
We're always looking for ways to work together again.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. That's for sure.
This goes back to like 2 years ago when we're like, hey, how do we do that again?
Yeah. You know?
I just, before we wrap up, I want to mark out here and just be a fan for a quick second. You know, I sat in the theater and watched some of the classics with my parents and watched videotapes with them. And they're both gone. But watching this short, I sat next to my 18-year-old son and my 15-year-old daughter now and my wife, and it's generational. And I just want to thank you all for all of the heartfelt thoughts and talent that you put into this short. It means a ton to Disney fans. It means a ton to me. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. That's everything to us. Thank you. That, you know, we knew that, like ourselves, the millions of people around the world, that they take ownership of these characters. They relate to them. They you know, obviously nostalgia and childhood is all steeped in these characters. And we wanted to do them, quote unquote, right. Like, we wanted to let everybody see their friends again. That's what, that was huge to us. And we wanted to represent them in the way that they remembered them. And so thank you for that. Cause that was kind of the core of why we wanted to do it in the first place.
And not just for the audiences like yourself, but also for ourselves. I mean, we had what you just mentioned, that's us as Disney fans. We just happen to work here and we're able to work on this thing, but we were making it for ourselves too in that way.
Well, and every day was like that for us. Like, we would get these 2D artists that were legends that would deliver. And I've told the story, so Dan and Trent know the story I'm about to tell, but we got James Baxter delivered Bambi, and it came in, and we all came into the room, and it was his roughs, and we're all sitting there, and it played, and we literally all melted into little children. Oh my God, Bambi's here. This is amazing. It's like, and it really was that moment. And every day was like Christmas morning in those reviews. And it was such a special project. And we just all, yeah, it was a lot of complexity and difficult at times, but it was just fun. Like, it was just so incredible to bring these characters back to life.
I think one of the things we said after it premiered to each other, we have a very long Facebook Messenger thread that we communicate with. One of the things we said was, this short did everything we wanted it to. As we were looking forward to the 100th anniversary, it checked all the boxes for us. So again, you know, thank you guys for that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Wow.
Yeah.
So, well, it has been a pleasure speaking with all of you, Dan and Trent and Brad. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules to talk with us. And we look forward to what's next.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much. What a pleasure.
That was a treat. We have been working on getting that interview with those three guys. Initially, we were just looking at Dan Abraham when Clara and I were on the studio lot. I don't remember if we talked about this during that show recap, but we actually met him outside the animation building, and that's the day they had gotten the final character count, 543 characters. So we had been working on this for a while, and then had to reschedule several times, but to have Dan and Trent and Brad with us, just given those insights, it was spectacular.
And we could have probably peppered them with 200 more questions, and I would have loved to have gone frame by frame and talk about all the decisions that went into making that short. But most importantly, just the idea of being able to talk to the creators of this amazing project, it was just phenomenal. Hey, don't forget, March 22nd through the 24th, we have our Disney Fest at the Peoria Riverfront Museum in Peoria, Illinois. And we have two guest speakers, J.B. Kaufman, who is an author, and Ted Thomas, director and producer and son of the famous animator Frank Thomas of Frank and Ollie fame. And I believe Ted is showing his film that he produced called Frank and Ollie. And there will be other movies shown that weekend as well. We'll have more details the closer we get. So if you're in the Central Illinois area, consider coming to the weekend, March 22nd through the 24th. Friday the 22nd will be a trivia night, and then the film fest goes on throughout the rest of the weekend. Until next week, make sure you follow us on social media. You can email us at podcast@thehyperionhub.com. And wherever you're listening to us, please rate and review so more people find the show. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week.
We're glad you could join us. We'd love to hear from you. You can email or send us a recorded audio message at podcast@thehyperionhub.com. Find us on social media. The Hyperion Hub is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company or its subsidiaries. We'll meet you next time at the Hyperion Hub.